Up next, the car of the future. Maybe. This week, General Motors rolled out its latest hydrogen-powered concept car called the Sequel. Now, if this sounds like deja vu all over again, perhaps it is. It is the third hydrogen concept car that GM has shown off. First, there was the Autonomy, and then the Highwire. Did you get to drive any of those? Do you have one in your garage, in your driveway? Have you seen one on the store? Have you seen one anywhere? Just a rhetorical question, because they never really went into production in any great length. And this time around, though, a GM executive said that the Sequel, quote, could flat out reinvent the automobile. He did not say it was a slam dunk. For the rest of the hour, we'll put that claim to the test. Is this third car the GM charm or just another empty promise? Foreign car makers are not sitting still. BMW has been showing off a hydrogen car for quite some time. Honda has plans to supply its FCX fuel cell vehicles to the city of Los Angeles. And today we'll find out what makes the Sequel tick, how it matches up to the hybrid cars, Toyota's Prius, Honda's Insight, and hybrid Civic, which are already on the road, and why the first generation of hydrogen-powered vehicles may not be much greener than their gas-powered counterparts. We'll also talk about the challenges of bringing a hydrogen car onto the streets and highways of the U.S. After all, why bring one? What good is a hydrogen car if you don't have the filling stations to service them? You know, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, but without having the electric generators, there was no sense in having a light bulb, so he invented those too. 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we're talking about this hour, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Let me introduce my guest. Tim Vail is the Director of Business Development for Fuel Cell Activity at General Motors in Greenwich, Connecticut. He joins us today by phone from Houston. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ira.
Good afternoon to you. Ron Kogan is the editor and publisher of the Green Car Journal, a former feature editor at MotorChend. He joins us today from his office in San Luis Obispo, California. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Ira.
You're welcome. Daniel Kamen is the director of the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Laboratory at the University of California, Berkeley. He joins us from the UC Berkeley campus. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Kamen.
Thanks a lot.
Tim, exciting. Everybody at GM very excited about this Sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our, as you said in your intro, it's our next generation fuel cell concept vehicle that's an entirely new type of vehicle based solely on a fuel cell power system.
You know, your boss, Lawrence Burns, head of GM's R&D department, is quoted in the New York Times as saying, quote, "The environmentalists who think we're doing a head fake with this, either they're not listening to that part of the story or believe we've made it up." Are we going to actually see this car on the road, or is it going to be just one, you know, in a long line of cars that never gets anywhere?
No, Ira, the vehicles that you mentioned are all concept vehicles. And what they are, they're meant to show what fuel cells can do and how a vehicle can be adapted and changed with a fuel cell propulsion system.
Mm-hmm.
And so this vehicle, we're only going to build one of them, and it will be a drivable car. It's going to have license plates and be on the roads, but we do not have production plans for this vehicle.
Right.
Now, what we're trying to demonstrate with this line of concept vehicles is that fuel cells can introduce not only an emissions-free vehicle, but also an entirely new type of vehicle. And that's what's exciting about the Sequel, is that it has incorporated in it many new technologies: fuel cell, drive-by-wire, a long-range hydrogen storage system, as well as fully integrated drive-by-wire and chassis controls. So
yeah,
it's a very, very new vehicle.
Let me ask you this: if we had if we had service stations that had hydrogen available, like they have in some places already, Washington D.C. has installed a pump. There are other places around the world. Could you make this a practical vehicle today if the infrastructure were there?
Yeah, this vehicle is what Larry Burns called it was a doable vehicle. Technically, we could actually make this happen. Now, we don't have it down to where we can do that cost effectively yet. The fuel cell system and the drive-by-wire components are still a generation or so away from being where they are as far as price, but we've got the vehicle from a technical standpoint working, and so we will actually see this vehicle on the roads. It will go up to the Shell station in Washington, D.C., for example, and refuel there, mm-hmm. as well as some stations in Southern California.
Ron Kogan, you've been following this business for quite some time. What do you think of the Sequel?
I think it's a pretty wonderful design, and I think it's a very logical next step from the Autonomy and the Highwire. I think the big picture here that most people don't understand is concept cars are just that. You have to look at this as a path. You may have a hydrogen concept car that's drivable now, and I drove the Highwire, by the way, and it was a pretty interesting car, but it's also an engineering exercise in that concepts are not expected to drive like a typical car, even though they have very advanced technology. All in all, it was an excellent car, though. But these cars are concepts to show that certain technologies can be used on the road. Now the challenge is, moving forward, is to make that fuel cell affordable, to enhance the durability, to make it a cost-effective power plant technology.
Dan Kamen, can you weigh in on where you think this is going?
Well, I also agree. This is an exciting vehicle to see in the design, and as I said, there's only making one of them. The real key, though, is that what are the plans to scale this up? And hydrogen is an exciting fuel for a variety of reasons I think we'll talk about today. The real issue, though, is that hydrogen is as clean or as exciting as is the clean as the source is. So if we get our hydrogen from fossil fuels, that doesn't buy us much, if anything. If we get it from clean renewable sources, it can buy us a whole lot. And so that's really the space in which we want to talk about this car.
Mm-hmm. Tim Vail, what has to happen if you're going to get a car, maybe not this exact one, if you're going to bring a fuel cell car to market and make it commercially viable, what do you have to do?
Well, Ira, we're following two paths. One is the autonomy concept vehicle, where we introduce an entirely new platform, an entirely new vehicle based on the fuel cell propulsion system. But we're also building a fuel cell vehicles that take a standard serialized production vehicle and insert a fuel cell propulsion system. And today we have a fleet of nine of those vehicles around the world. They're an Opel Zafira minivan that uses a fuel cell system. And those vehicles complement the Sequel line of high technology vehicles. And we will be coming out with another generation of those vehicles to start to build that infrastructure, start to use these stations, and start to get people familiar with the cars.
Mm-hmm. Ron Kogan, there is a great thirst, I think, for green vehicles, and especially you look at the Prius. I was on a waiting list for 9 months. I've given up, and I bought a Volkswagen diesel. You know, that's the closest I could get. you would think that the car companies would just be jumping on this
well,
sort
you know,
of thing.
The car companies, you know, the tea leaves are not always very accurate. So hybrid vehicles represent an all-new technology and an all-new market. So you can't just get in the boardroom and say, we're going to pour out innumerable copies of this and hope that they sell. You go out with product plans and you think, okay, we're going to take a shot. We believe we're going to sell X number as they're being introduced. And you have to remember when the Honda Insight first came out and the Toyota first generation Toyota Prius, those cars weren't on fire. Those weren't setting new records for sales and waiting lists. It's when the second generations came out, when the new Prius came out, that it developed a 24,000 order backlog. And now that you have other vehicles coming out, there's a great demand for some of those hybrid vehicles. But it's very hard to project in advance that you're not going to have a whole lot of those sitting on the lot. So they were too conservative in my eyes coming out of the gate, and now they're going to make up for it by ramping up production. But it's not as easy as that because some of those components are pretty unique. They have to have enough batteries to include in each unit. So batteries have been an issue as well.
Mm-hmm. Dan, let's talk a bit about what kind of infrastructure is needed to support hydrogen cars. Pipelines. You mentioned that if we make hydrogen from fossil fuels, we're not going to save anything environmentally speaking. There's talk about using coal and putting the carbon dioxide back in the ground because there's more coal on Earth than we can measure, so to speak, especially in this country.
That's true.
Where do you think where is the impetus going to come from? Do you think we could develop? I've had people come on and talk about wind power, you know, sticking the leads from a wind generator into water and you got hydrogen. Could you
right.
do
well,
that?
I think that you certainly could, and that's actually that's the most exciting thing about this vehicle, the Sequel, and the other fuel cell ones in my mind, that we can get the hydrogen from a whole variety of sources. Right now, actually, hydrogen is produced quite inexpensively commercially from fossil fuels. Doesn't buy us a lot environmentally, but we have a lot of hydrogen around, certainly much more than we need for these few cars that we have today. because we can get hydrogen from using electrolysis, using photovoltaics or from solar or from reforming fossil fuels or biomass, and actually some of my favorites, getting it from some advanced biological sources, having microbes that basically breathe out, that respirate hydrogen, we've got the opportunity to build a diverse infrastructure here. That's the exciting part of the story. And so the vehicle ends up being the flashy front end, but the real key part of the message is, how do you build that out? And right now, there's many places in the country with enough hydrogen around, if we actually had some fuel cell vehicles to run on them. That's what we want to be working on at the same time as rolling out the vehicles. That is the important flashy part of the story as well.
Tim, is the car industry going to drag the hydrogen industry, or is it going to be vice versa?
Well, I think we're going to work cooperatively. You know, Dan's right. The exciting thing about hydrogen and fuel cell vehicles is that hydrogen can be made from so many diverse sources, many of them renewable. And, you know, hydrogen is available. There is quite a bit of hydrogen, let's say, behind the fence in the industrial environment. Most of it is made from natural gas. Most of it today is used to desulfurize gasoline for today's vehicles. And if we could start taking some of that hydrogen and mixing it with some hydrogen produced from renewable sources, we could start to have a truly sustainable fueling infrastructure. Now, a number of things have to take place. We've got to get that hydrogen from where it is behind the fence in the industrial plant to the streets and to be delivered at a retail pump. And there's been a lot of exciting developments here in the past 2 years with the opening of the Shell station in Washington, D.C., as well as all the work that's going on in Southern California, in particular around the California Hydrogen Highway. And so we see these efforts and we applaud these efforts, and we're working hard on our side to build a vehicle that can take advantage of this hydrogen and really deliver a consumer experience that is similar to today's vehicle as far as performance and range, but yet have zero emissions and run on hydrogen.
Do you think that people are willing to sacrifice? You see these giant, you make some of the biggest SUVs around. Is there a population of people and consumer and demand enough, and I think there is, for people to say, I've had enough of the 400 horsepower engines, I'm willing to pay a little bit more and buy, you know, a hydrogen car?
Well, we definitely think there is a strong segment of the consuming public that's interested in all types of hydrogen and advanced technology vehicles. But, Ira, what's exciting about the fuel cell from an automaker's perspective is that we can take and build a zero emissions vehicle that doesn't require those compromises. The fuel cell power density can be equal to or greater than the density, mm-hmm. power density of an internal combustion engine. So theoretically, in the future, you're going to be able to have your SUV or have whatever vehicle you want, and yet it's still going to be a zero emitter and have the same power that you have today. And that's what's very exciting from our perspective.
Ira? Well, let me just do a quick break, and then you can all get your licks in. We're talking about hydrogen cars this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dan, did you want to say something?
No, it was Ron Kogan. I just wanted to add that the goal shouldn't be to downsize cars necessarily. The goal should be to make the vehicles we have extremely fuel efficient, mm-hmm. and extremely low emission. And the Opel Zafira minivan that GM uses for the Hydrogen 3 is a minivan. It's not a small vehicle. It runs on hydrogen. So that's the goal, is to bring this propulsion to all categories of vehicles.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm hoping is that the use of this isn't to justify making bigger SUVs. Sort of hydrogen H2 to power your H2 Hummer is not exactly the message I'm hoping to get out of it. It is that for what the vehicles need to do, hydrogen provides us a way to make zero tailpipe emissions. And that's a very important gain. One of the aspects of that is that in our older cars in the fleet today, it's actually the oldest, dirtier clunkers that produce a lot of the pollution. The so-called failure mode for a fuel cell vehicle isn't to start putting out a lot of traditional pollution. It doesn't do anything of the kind. And so you really can get some of those dirty cars off the roads as well if you were to think about this as part of a strategy. But it can't just be, well, let's keep building bigger and bigger cars and just power them up with hydrogen.
Ron, aren't there cars already that are super low emission levels, putting out very low levels that might compare with the Prius or the Honda?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they're certified as either SULEV, super ultra low emission vehicles, or PZEVs, partial zero emission vehicles. And they have emissions so low, they're barely measurable. So we've come a long way. I believe there are 19 or 21 model cars right now that have PZEV engines, and many more that have SULEVs. Mm-hmm. They run on gasoline.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an important point, that the sort of the target is moving, and that our internal combustion engine vehicles are getting cleaner. And when you mix in hybrids, of which there's now over 150,000 on the roads today with the waiting list that you described, that the overall average is coming down. And so the hydrogen vehicles to mix into that are going to need to get that hydrogen from those clean sources.
Yeah, and Ira, it's exciting and from the emission standpoint, but also what's really truly exciting about the fuel cell vehicle and hydrogen is that from the petroleum dependency standpoint. You know, for the first time, we can have vehicles that are equivalent to what we have today that aren't dependent upon imported petroleum. Hydrogen can come from all the sources we've already discussed. Many of those sources can be domestic. And so you get the emissions benefit, but you also get this tremendous oil dependency benefit as well.
Mm-hmm. And you had asked, Ira, about who's going to drive this, the oil companies or the auto industry. And really, it is both. The oil industry is not so much the oil industry these days as they are the energy industry. They understand there will come a time when their core product is not going to be as viable as it is this day. And so they're investing in other technologies and in hydrogen. You have Shell Hydrogen. You have BP Solar, which is going in that direction. You have Chevron Texaco Technology Ventures. They're all interested in providing energy. So in the end, as we start directing our efforts toward more sustainable resources, hopefully these companies are going to be at the forefront of that because there's a lot of money in that.
But we have to wait for oil to run out, don't we? And we don't know when that's going to happen.
I mean,
that's the logic of the oil industry. Why, you know...
Absolutely not. We think that, you know, if the auto industry can build a compelling vehicle that runs on hydrogen, we can begin that transition many, many decades earlier than originally thought. And we are focused hard to get that technology in the right place. And as Ron said, the oil industry, particularly Shell and Chevron Texaco, who we work with closely, they have worked very hard to advance the hydrogen effort, and opening the station in Washington, D.C. was a huge achievement. And Shell now is also our partner with the Department of Energy's program. And we see them readily embracing the opportunity to deliver hydrogen.
All right, we're going to have to hang in there because we have to pay some bills. So stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back, talk more about hydrogen with Ron Kogan, Daniel Kamen, and Tim Vail. And take your phone calls. I know lots of you want to get your two cents in, and you should. So we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about green cars, hydrogen cars, hybrid vehicles. My guests are Daniel Kamen, who is Distinguished Chair in Energy and Director of the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Laboratory, UC Berkeley, Ron Kogan, Editor and Publisher of the Green Car Journal in San Luis Obispo, and Tim Vail, Director of the Business Development for Fuel Cell Activity at GM, and he's talking with us by the phone. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. I cut off somebody who was trying to jump in. Right before
I think that might have been me.
Go ahead.
I think that what we just hit before the break was really the key point, and that is that what we really need to do to make these hydrogen vehicles really as exciting environmentally as they can be, and that is to make our overall energy system one that moves towards these cleaner options. And some oil companies are moving that way, and some are arguably moving much more slowly. What we need to do is to set some priorities so that the hydrogen vehicles and the hybrids and the battery electric vehicles will all be part of an overall set of solutions, because we're not going to solve the environmental problem with one of these alone. Kind of the striking number is that there's about 750 million cars on the planet, and we would basically have to have all of those cars running off of hydrogen, all coming from renewable sources, a huge, inconceivable task in the short term, to really make a major climate difference with this. But it is an important first step, and if we build out that set of options, getting the hydrogen from all these good sources and this diverse set of options, also making vehicles more efficient, the so-called CAFE standards, that really is a recipe to sort of heal the planet by making our cars much cleaner and more interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. If you just lower the CAFE standards, you could really do a whole heck of a lot for energy efficiency.
Well, that was a sad that's right. That's really been one sad casualty of the last several years of inaction under several administrations, and that is that ramping up those vehicle efficiency standards overall for all cars opens up a space for hybrids and fuel cells, because it values what they do best, and that is have low emissions. And letting our CAFE standards, these corporate average fuel efficiency standards, just remain stagnant has really been throwing away gasoline and money that we didn't need to.
Mm-hmm. Faye in Medina, Ohio, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
My question is, if you get a large number of these cars on the road and they're producing all this excess moisture, what is that going to do to the climate, to our atmosphere?
Yeah, well, because water is a greenhouse gas.
Yeah, well,
it is.
Good question.
It is true, actually.
Yeah, but fuel cell vehicles.
Well, let me let Dan go first, then.
Okay.
Okay. There was actually a bit of an academic spat about this a year and a half ago when a paper came out claiming just what the caller is saying, that a lot of excess water vapor being put in the air by vehicles using hydrogen and producing their only emissions as the energy and water vapor was going to change the climate. And in fact, both the leakage rates of hydrogen that this group assumed turned out to be very far off, and then a competing research group in Germany redid the analysis and concluded that, in fact, that was just simply not an issue, that the amount of water vapor and some of the other chemicals is not going to be anywhere a signal that matters climatically.
Right. And Dan, and to be honest, the combustion of hydrocarbon fuels, gasoline in your vehicle, produces almost as much water vapor as a fuel cell vehicle would. So there's not going to be a tremendous amount of additional water vapor put into the planet.
Don in Denver, hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Back in May 2004, Scientific American had a long article about the energy efficiency of hydrogen cars, and they concluded that the efficiency of weld wheels was lowest for hydrogen also, that hydrogen used in a vehicle produced by Grid Electric had the worst emissions of any form of vehicle power.
Gentlemen, any comment?
Yeah, if you're going to produce electricity by coal and then turn that coal into hydrogen, that certainly is not the right pathway. The correct pathway is what we discussed earlier in the production of hydrogen by looking at renewable sources as well as using natural gas and potentially some nuclear sources for the production of hydrogen. If you do follow that pathway, you get a much, much lower emissions impact as well as a much lower greenhouse gas impact.
But is our government in agreement with you? I mean, following the last campaign, you heard people talking about using coal to make hydrogen. They weren't talking about alternative fuel.
Yeah, well, you can make there's alternative ways to use coal to make hydrogen. You can use it through coal gasification, which is a process that is only in the experimental stages today. And by taking coal and running it through this gasification process, you can produce electricity and you can produce a large amount of hydrogen. Now, the byproduct of that is a significant quantity of CO2, but the CO2 at least would be produced at a single source where, if sequestration technologies advance like we hope, there is the opportunity to be able to sequester that CO2. Mm-hmm. But if you were just to take a more simplistic approach and say, we're going to take electricity off the grid, which in the United States is primarily produced by coal, burning coal, combustion, and then turn that into hydrogen through electrolysis and then put it into a vehicle, that is not the right way to go. It's too expensive, and it does increase the overall emissions load from fuel cell vehicles.
Yeah, and in fact, the article that the caller is referring to was one that really did highlight the fact that this is the current way to get hydrogen most cheaply. It's not the way that anyone sees down the line, and in fact, the real benefit here is that because you can get hydrogen from these various sources, we can use that hydrogen today to power the zeroth or first generation of vehicles, but everyone plans on this cleaner supply side of hydrogen down the line, even coming quite soon, because hydrogen can come from so many different sources.
Right.
Dan, how much are foreign interests going to influence our automobile industry and the cars and possibly even the hydrogen cars? You know, China is now growing up and getting hungry, thirsty, and wants cars. And they're actually looking at cleaner cars, aren't they?
They certainly are. In fact, I would say China is actually taking this in a way that I think makes a lot of sense, in that they are looking at fuel cell cars down the line as we are. They're also looking at what they call smart cars, these very small town cars that are now quite popular in Europe. Mercedes plans to market them here in the United States. Electric cars for use in towns, car sharing. There's a whole variety of strategies that are important and should be on the table. And one of the criticisms of the program in the United States is that it's been quite myopic. It's basically said that hydrogen fuel cell cars are our long-term solution there, that's the exciting way to go, and that these interim options haven't really been supported. Now, that's not to say anything negative about the fuel cell cars, but it's that what we really need to do to make a dent is to have all of these in play and to support them. And the U.S. has been a little bit slow, and they've even pulled some electric vehicles off the road. So it's been a mixed message here.
Mm. Well, we don't really have an energy policy. I mean, it's
well, that's sad but true.
Whatever it is, you know.
To Tim's point, this is Ron again.
Yeah.
I think it isn't just a single arrow in the quiver, and I think people really don't have a very good understanding of that. We have really highly efficient gasoline vehicles now are highly, extremely low emission, high efficiency diesel vehicles, and we're going to be seeing many, many more advanced diesel vehicles on the roads. We have hybrids that are coming in probably all model lines, all car segments. And then we have the fuel cell vehicles, which is the longer range program that's just going to improve year by year until we finally get there. But clearly, it isn't just one single technology. It isn't one single fuel. We need to be looking at anything that helps diminish our dependence on foreign oil and mitigate emissions.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges overall is that you know gasoline and oil has been so cheap. It's remained very inexpensive over the years, and it's very, very hard to compete with for the alternative fuel vehicle. Now, that's beginning to change, and the public awareness is beginning to change. And so, you know, we're very excited about the future potential of not only our fuel cell vehicles, but our new advanced ICE engines, as well as our hybrid vehicles that we have coming out.
Let's go to Jason in Phoenix. Hi, Jason.
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Why is alcohol not an option? If I remember right, it's 20% more power than a normal engine, gas engine, but it's 20% less efficient. But, you know, older engines could be modified. There could maybe be a tax credit that they could give. The bacteria is a renewable resource. It just seems like hydrogen's taken off.
Well, Ron?
There are probably about 4 million cars on the road today that can either run on gasoline or E85 ethanol, any mixture of those fuels in the same tank. Those are brand new vehicles, and they're available in certain models, I think 19 models. And most people who have these vehicles are just unaware that they can run on both fuels. The problem is there are only a couple hundred ethanol stations in the entire country, so there's no way to fuel most of them.
That was one of the first things that President Reagan did in his first actions was to kill the alternative fuel program.
It was quite unfortunate. Yeah. I mean, I think one aspect of that story is that other countries like Brazil have actually done quite well in getting a lot of vehicles run on ethanol. The problem in the U.S. is that we do subsidize some of these biofuels quite highly, but we don't subsidize. We haven't figured a way politically to support the chain so that if the fuels come from agricultural issues, they come from the Midwest primarily, and we should support that through agricultural initiatives. But we need to have some market pull. We need to get the stations built, and we need to encourage at the federal and state level the efforts to get these cars as the one used, like having states buy them as their fleets. That would be one way to build out the market so that we really could use these fuels.
Is it going to be up to states like California to pull the other parts of the country along and to set standards for what cars will be built, do you think?
California has always done that. Historically, California has led in all of the vehicle trends, including the environmental trends and the emissions mitigation. And right now, California is trying to be in the lead on lowering greenhouse gas emissions, which equates to higher fuel economy. Mm-hmm. So clearly, California sets a trend that's generally followed by the nation, which is generally followed by the world.
Where does the governor stand on this one?
You know,
he's in favor.
He's very much in favor of these measures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually interesting. Sorry.
Go ahead.
This brings up the sort of the other interesting aspect of hydrogen, and that is it provides a way to link with so-called mobile sources and stationary sources,
right,
meaning that the hydrogen can come from production at stationary sources and be used in vehicles. So you can have no tailpipe emissions from the cars, and if you get that hydrogen cleanly, as we've been describing, that can have an overall benefit. So one of the terms often used is this idea of hydricity, meaning hydrogen provides the carrier and the means to turn energy that you get from, say, an intermittent, meaning it's not always available source like wind, and use the hydrogen to store it and then use that energy later on so that it provides the buffer that you need to make these renewables more effective in the market. And that's actually another exciting transformation that I would say is as exciting as the changes that are available in the SQL vehicle itself, the way to link mobile and stationary.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the very interesting things is fuel cell work is not just focused on transportation. It's also stationary power generation. So you'll have, instead of more nuclear plants, instead of more even cleaner natural gas plants, you're going to have plants that are creating electricity through fuel cells with no combustion. Greenhouse gases.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We're talking about hydrogen this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. In fact, Tim Vail, you're out someplace where they're doing that, are you not?
Right, that's right. I was just about to join in to Ron's comment. We actually have taken our fuel cell systems that we're planning to put in our vehicles, and we have them running down at a Dow Chemical plant here right outside of Houston in Freeport, Texas. And what they're doing there is they're taking hydrogen, which is produced as a byproduct from their chemical process, and we're turning that hydrogen into electricity, which helps offset new construction, new power plant construction there at the plant as well as in the Texas grid. And kind of an interesting trend. It's worked out very well for us. Amazing how much hydrogen is produced as a byproduct of the chemical process. And that hydrogen, typically, because it's displaced, it's hard to find a home. They use it just as a combustion fuel in their boilers. And we're taking that hydrogen and actually turning it into a very high-value electricity. So it really works well. And we see that the distributed generation or stationary power is a key stepping stone to the future hydrogen-powered fuel cell vehicle.
Could this be a new business for GM?
It's certainly something we're looking at. The contract with Dow Chemical was the world's largest fuel cell contract to date, so it was a very large transaction, and we have been very pleased. Dow has been pleased as well, and we hope to expand that relationship with Dow, and also are looking for other sources. But the key thing is that we've got to get this technology right for the vehicle. And once we get it right for the vehicle, then we can start to really expand into some of these other markets.
Who makes the fuel cells for your vehicles?
We actually do. We have our own fuel cell development program. To date, we have over 600 people working on the project. And we produce it from the actual fuel cell components itself all the way to the end unit and the power electronics to turn that power into something useful.
Ira. I think it's important to mention that this is an industry-wide effort. You have every major automaker that has hydrogen fuel cell vehicles out there, concept vehicles or demonstration vehicles, from Honda and Nissan to Hyundai and Ford. And you have others as well that are also looking at power generation along with transportation. Honda has a home energy system they're working on with Plug Power, where a home could be powered by hydrogen. You reform the natural gas that comes into the home to create electricity to power your house, and it also creates hydrogen to fuel your hydrogen fuel cell vehicle at home.
Yeah, and Ron, I think we're going to see this convergence of the vehicle, fuel cell vehicles and stationary power sources, and also you're going to be able to think of your fuel cell vehicle as a power generator itself. So, for example, if you had a blackout condition or a power outage at your home, you would be able to plug in your fuel cell vehicle and use what comparatively is a lot of power coming out of your vehicle to operate your home.
Dan, you get last word.
That's actually an important point, because the vehicle's power demands are actually much larger than a house, often 10 times more. And so the state of Louisiana is actually considering buying a whole fleet of fuel cell trucks, and they will use those as mobile power plants after an emergency like a hurricane. So they can sort of swarm their pickup trucks with fuel cells as the power plant down and power hospitals and things after a blackout. So hydrogen really does allow you to think very differently about stationary and mobile sources. But again, it's got to be part of this broader energy plan.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can ever come up with one. I want to thank all of you for taking time to join us. Ron Kogan, editor and publisher of the Green Car Journal. Daniel Kamen, director of the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Lab at UC Berkeley. Tim Vail, director of business development for fuel cell activity at GM. Thank you all for taking time to join us today, and have a good weekend.
Thank you, Ara.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Finn. Surf over to our website, sciencefriday.com. Free teaching curricula. Download back editions of Science Friday. And while you're doing it, have a great weekend. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.